Hello and welcome to the Calm You podcast. This is Chloe Brotheridge. As usual, I am the author of The Anxiety Solution, a hypnotherapist, and I specialise in helping people with anxiety. Thank you so much for tuning in. If this is the first time that you're joining me on the podcast, if you're a regular listener, thank you so much for your support up until now. I love getting messages from you and emails and, you know, seeing your posts on Instagram. And it really inspires me to keep going with this podcast. So please get in touch if you've got any feedback. You can find me on Instagram at Chloe Brotheridge, and I would love to hear from you. So this week, I am really lucky to be joined by Claire Eastman, who is the author of the best-selling book, We're All Mad Here. It's a book about social anxiety. And she runs the blog, We're All Mad Here, which is incredibly popular and successful blog helping people with all different types of anxiety. And in this podcast, we're going to be talking about social anxiety and touching on topics such as insomnia and even public speaking. And if you don't know about Claire already, she's going to share a bit about her journey with anxiety. I think you're going to find that she's really down to earth. She really knows her stuff, and yet she's very relatable as well. So she's also very, very funny as well, so that's always a bonus. When we're talking about mental health, it can get pretty heavy, so to have a voice like Claire adding some levity to the conversation, I think, is really helpful. And if you're not already signed up to my email list, I want to invite you to come over to calm-you.com/free. I will send you a free relaxation MP3, and I'll also get in touch about every fortnight, letting you know about events that I've got going on. I'll send you details of the latest podcasts and blog posts that are up on Calm You. And every now and again, I give away little freebies as well, or I might make a recording or a worksheet and send that out. So you're only going to get that if you sign up to my newsletter. So head over to calmer-you.com and join me there. So I really hope you enjoy this interview with Claire, and let me know what you think. Hi Claire, thanks so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have a proper chat with you. I wanted to just sit down and have a chat to you for ages, and hopefully we'll get to hang out in real life at some point soon, but
yeah,
over Skype will do for now. I'm sure lots of people do know about you and your work, but for anyone that doesn't, can you just tell us a bit about your story and the work that you do?
Sure. So I'm a mental health blogger. I write the blog We're All Mad Here, which is a quote from Alice in Wonderland. It's my favourite one. My career, so to speak, with mental health began by accident, because I live with social anxiety and panic disorder, but I wasn't actually diagnosed until 2013 when I had a nervous breakdown. I'm one of those people who's kind of like white knuckle it. Okay, keep going. No, it's fine. We'll just get through this meeting. We'll just get through this project. And then, but the kind of moment to relax or take care of yourself just never happened with me. And I had a nervous breakdown. I laugh about it now, and it's a story I tell a lot, but I was in a meeting and I had what I now know is a panic attack. But at the time, I thought I was dying or losing my mind. And even in that circumstance, because I have social anxiety, I was like, well, I best not draw attention to myself. So I stood up and said in front of like five people in this Jane Austen style voice that I have a neurovirus and I must leave at once. Yeah. I've never said at once in my entire life.
Yeah. But
that's what came to me, and I bolted out of the room and all the way down the street. And that's when I had to confront what was going on in my head, because it literally burst through my subconscious.
Yeah.
And I mean, after I was diagnosed, a lot of the stuff that I was reading was either really clinical, like to an extent that, like, I don't understand any of this, and or it was bleak. Mm. I think a lot of the problem with the internet is that people don't go back and update, say, the person who says social anxiety has ruined my life, I haven't, you know, been able to leave the house in a year. When they're better, they don't go back and say, oh no, it's fine. So that gets like stuck in cyberspace for someone like me to read. So during my recovery, I thought, if I get better, I'm going to start writing some of this down in plain English, like no kind of trying to seem smarter than I am or whatever. I'm just going to jot it down and stuff that I've learned that I think helps. And people really responded to it. And it kind of, the blog eventually became a book of the same name, which, yeah, is incredible when I think about it.
Amazing, amazing. And I must have come across your blog years ago. I can't remember when it was, but I'd followed you for ages. And then I think we met at your book launch.
Yeah.
Was that last year or the year before? And what I love about your blog is that, you know, you're so open and honest and so kind of down to earth with everything. And I know that, you know, it's been incredibly popular, I think, because people can really relate to it, and you give advice that is very practical and easy to sort of follow. So keep up the amazing work with that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of what you're saying about kind of having social anxiety and that panic attacks and just kind of keeping going, I think that's such a common thing, isn't it? People will be suffering for ages and ages before they go and get some help or even acknowledge that, you know, it's not just shyness, it's not just, you know, there's something, you know, wrong with you that, you know, is only you suffer from this. Actually, it is something that is a recognised issue and you should get some help with it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a good point you've touched on about shyness, because as a kid, you know, it's like, oh, she's just shy and that kind of thing. But as an adult, that's no longer acceptable, and you have to then be able to hold a conversation. And if you struggle with that, that kind of thing in the back of your head, like you're shy, it then becomes a negative, like there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what would you say were the differences between being shy and actual social anxiety? How do you make that distinction?
Well, I always see shyness as like temporary. When somebody gets into a social situation, they might seem a bit shy at first. I mean, this is a really weird way to put it, but you know, like when you first meet a dog or a cat, how they're a bit wary for the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're fine. And like, that's shyness to me. Like that kind of, oh, I don't know you, let's take a minute until I feel more comfortable. Where in like the opposite is social anxiety, is you do not relax throughout that entire social interaction. And after it's taken place, you kind of go over it and pick it to pieces and analyze it to point out, what did I do wrong? What could I do better next time?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, unfortunately, there's still so much shame around social anxiety, because, I mean, just talking from my own experience with it, thinking that we should be able just to snap out of it, or, you know, I'm too old to be shy now. I should just be able to do these things. Other people can do it. Why can't I do it? And actually, you know, when you're actually experiencing it, you know that it's so debilitating and it feels impossible sometimes for you to do things that it seems like other people find so easy. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, a lot of what you've done is just to kind of take away that shame and stigma around social anxiety and get us talking about it more, which I think is really amazing.
Yeah. Sorry about, comparing people to animals, you know? Mm. Like, I'm a huge animal lover, so I'm like, how can I bring my dog into this?
Yeah. So. Well, we are animals, essentially. We're more sophisticated, but we are still animals. And your dog is amazing, by the way. I'm very jealous of your dog.
Well, she's great. I mean, she's so honest. If she's, you know, uncomfortable, she'll just hide under the couch. And I'm like, that seems like a great idea. Why is that not acceptable for me? You know?
Amazing. So, I mean, what, just going back to kind of your kind of journey, what, when did you actually get help, and when did you, and what things did you try, and what helped you with your anxiety?
I was prescribed sertraline, which is an SSRI medication. Can we just take a moment to point out, like, SSRI medication? I could say the entire, you know, correct name for it, but I'm like, really? That's just a prime example of something that's really overcomplicated.
Yes, but, yeah, yeah.
So I take that, which I still take today, but a lower dosage. I've actually just started seeing a therapist again now after a long time, because it helped me the first time around. CBT and a little bit of just talking therapy.
Yeah.
You know, like just blah, get it all out of the head and into the cold light of day. And being honest and talking about it in general has been a huge thing for me, because I kept it a secret for 24 years, just to be able to say, actually, I'm not okay. I'm very uncomfortable. It doesn't mean I can't enjoy the party. I just might need 5 minutes to kind of, you know, just relax and just calm down a little bit. And the usual boring exercise, because I really like, you know, going for a walk or treadmill or that kind of stuff. Really, I'm really into audiobooks at the moment.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
Excuse, like, go for a run and be like, yes, Norse mythology.
I have to get your recommendations, because I am a lover of audiobooks as well. I talked in my last podcast about shame and how, you know, our mental health issues are compounded by the fact that we keep things to ourselves because we're ashamed of people knowing. And the moment that we're open about what we're experiencing, it does feel as if something has lifted. And it's not the cure for mental health issues, but it really does help us to talk about that. I mean, what would you say to people who are still at that point where they're keeping things to themselves, about whether it's telling friends or family, or any advice that you'd have for them?
I mean, it's so easy to say, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. And I worry that that borders on kind of being patronizing at times, because I know that, but it, you know, the person has to figure, you know, discover that for themselves. But so I always do the physical comparison. Like I said, you know, you wouldn't be ashamed of a broken bone, would you? You wouldn't be embarrassed because you had a headache or stubbed your toe or something. So try and give your brain the same respect. I think if you're going to tell someone, that's fantastic. If it can be a family member, great. If not, then, you know, the Samaritans, Anxiety UK, and I would even say just jot a few things down, because if you're not used to talking about it, it can be like a rabbit in the headlights, you know, like, I don't feel right. Or so I kind of like write down the symptoms, like physical and emotional, and how it affects you, and kind of take it from there, really. And I think 9 times out of 10, people are really pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, we've all gone through it. I'm just really firm believer that at some point in your life, everybody goes through something like it, you know?
Yeah, that's such a good idea to make some notes beforehand, before you're going to speak to someone, or even before your first therapy session or something, just to have those ideas to hand, so that you're not, I suppose it takes a bit of pressure off, that you don't have to think on your feet, or, you know, if you get lost for words or something, you've got that backup there.
Absolutely. I'm hilarious when it comes to therapy, because the first session both times, and I thought I'd be better this time, you know, because it's a few years later, like, I'll be fine. No, I turned up, I didn't take my coat off. I was sat on the edge of the chair, and she's like, how are you? And I'm like, I'm fine, yes, how are you?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're not sat here for you to be like, I'm fine, yes, tell me about your life. Like, no, this is why we make notes. So
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think it's so good for people to talk about the fact that they've had therapy, because I've noticed, obviously, yourself and some other people that I follow on Instagram have talked about the fact that they're having therapy, and I think it just helps to normalize it, because actually I think it should be normal, because we are all going to struggle with something at some point in our lives, and I think we all need help, and just to normalize that process, I think it's going to encourage so many poor people to do it. So so to people listening who are thinking about having therapy, you know, it does work. It's not this, I don't know, do people think it's airy-fairy, or people, what do you think holds people back from going and getting help?
I suppose it's for me, it was the self-indulgent side of it, you know, like, yeah. my life's fine. What have I got to complain about? You know, I'm not, you know, I don't live in poverty, you know, I don't have any kind of horrible, tragic physical impairment. I was really kind of ashamed and felt guilty about going, but that in itself is part of the trick, you know, the anxiety trick, I think, because it again fools you into thinking you don't deserve help. Mm-hmm. And everybody deserves help.
Absolutely. And yeah, I suppose mental health issues don't discriminate. You know, you could be, I think if you look at statistics, for example, of models, they have rates of anxiety and depression much higher than the general population. So you can be really successful, beautiful, you know, physically perfect, and yet still be anxious or depressed. And it, you know, your life experiences don't necessarily have a bearing on that. So, I mean, what do you think has helped you the most in terms of your kind of mental health journey?
To repeat myself, it is actually being open and honest about it. And not just with close people close to me, like family and friends. I actually, before I worked for myself, I was honest with my employers about it, which I never thought I would. And I, it just helped me to, it's like almost gets that weight off my shoulder, that thing digging. It's, I always say it's like a tiger digging its claws in my back. It's this horrible fear of they mustn't find out, because if they do, you'll never get promoted, and they think, they'll think you can't do your job. And I can't speak for every employer, but mine were great. They were really supportive. And I just explained that it won't hinder me any more than a bad cold would. You know, I might not be on form for a few days, but it's not going to affect my performance.
Yeah, I think that's such an important topic, because I know when I was working in a kind of job for a company years ago, I accessed the therapy service through work, but I could only get an appointment during the day, which would mean I'd have to tell my boss about having to take time off to work to do this. And I ended up not accessing that because I was too scared, basically, to talk to my employer. And I can't remember what I did in the end. Maybe I went privately, or maybe I just didn't have any therapy and just kind of got on with it, unfortunately. And I know this is something that you talk about. Was this the topic of your Stylist Live talk about kind of mental health at work, or...
Can you
tell us a bit about that and what you shared in that talk?
It was embracing the power of vulnerability, because, you know, I mean, a lot of TV shows today, which I'm a huge fan of, including Game of Thrones, portray this idea of, you know, this rock solid, cunning, strong all the time, superhuman who never has a bad day. And in order to win at life, you always have to be on it. You know, you have to be everything to everyone, and it's not only unhealthy, it's impossible. It's not achievable. And I think the more we're kind of fed that by popular culture, and I don't know, by employers themselves, the worse mental health is going to get. So I kind of spoke about that and how people can be more vulnerable at work in their own lives, but in a kind of safe way, not as in like, because I don't know, vulnerable is a strange, it's an interesting word, because it implies kind of weakness. I really want to change that and be like, it's a good thing to show that you're human, to show that I have a bad day. You know, I have bad days, I might need some help. And I think you learn so much more when you open up yourself to get help.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And so would your recommendation be that people should be open with their employers or their line manager at work and tell them what's going on with them, and you know, be open about that
where possible? Because I know it's not, some people don't have good relationships with their managers and that kind of thing, but where possible, that's great. If you could start with a colleague, or or even you could speak to someone in HR. Employers have to take mental health more seriously now, with things like mental health first aid. It's becoming much more kind of, I don't want to say serious, because it should be serious, it's becoming a priority. And if they want you to thrive at work, then they should accept the fact that you might have bad days brain wise. And if you kind of take control and say, this is what I might need from you if I'm having a bad day, and this is rubbish, you might have to edit this out, I don't know.
No, don't worry at all.
I'll reset that. It's just, it depends on the kind of relationship you have, but I think that you say in your book about putting your health, when you start putting your health and well-being first, the change is incredible in all aspects of your life.
I like that phrase, a bad brain day, because sometimes it just feels like that, doesn't it? If you're having a day where your mental health feels shaky and it feels hard to do the things that you would normally be able to do, just to kind of acknowledge that, I think, is really important. And I was reading recently that stress is the most, the biggest cause of work disability in the world. So really? Stress and kind of mental health issues. So yeah, obviously employers need to be starting to take that more seriously and start to do more for people. So can you talk a bit about your experiences with public speaking? Because for someone with social anxiety, you know, it's public speaking has got to be the worst kind of aspect of that, hasn't it? Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, the irony is not lost on me at all. I'm like, what? When I'm talking about social anxiety, stood on a stage with like 100 people listening, it's I suppose you might say it affects people in different ways. I get incredibly nervous to the point that I could vomit before I go on stage, and I get nervous like everybody else. But I'm much more, I struggle a lot more, say, in meetings or parties or, you know, when people, that direct line of people looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm crowded in an environment, whereas when I'm, like, talking to people who I'm not perhaps making eye-to-eye contact with everyone, and I have a script and no one can interrupt me with like a question. Well, you know, at the end, I mean, like in normal conversations, people might chip in, or there isn't that. Cause I'm one of these people who has to fill uncomfortable silences. So I'll just talk absolute crap and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. Whereas during a presentation, it's something I've kind of planned and become more comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still think, yeah, it's amazing to be able to do that despite the kind of the issues around feeling very nervous. And I mean, what would you advise to someone who perhaps has social anxiety or gets so nervous about things like public speaking? What have you learned about that that's helped you, or would you have any sort of advice for them?
Sure. Actually, you know what? I did myself a disservice there because it hasn't come easily. You know, after my breakdown, I couldn't even sit in an office without having a panic attack. So the idea of speaking in public was just an absolute no. But I did I think, I don't know if you've ever heard of exposure therapy. So it always makes me laugh because, you know, when they say like exposure therapy, it doesn't mean like if you're afraid of heights, jump off a building. It's much more, it's about building those foundations. If public speaking is a part of what you know, your job or something you can't get away from, that's fine. Rather than just thinking, oh God, I only have to do it once a year, or trying to avoid it, let's work with that fear. Let's think, okay, do a little bit, build those foundations. So practice doing a presentation to yourself in the mirror. Feel uncomfortable, and rather than trying to fight it, think, okay, this is how I feel when I'm nervous. This is what's going to happen, and nothing more. You know, I think people worry about losing control or these horrible things that will happen when they do public speaking. And a lot of it is just the anxiety screaming in your head, I'm afraid, I'm afraid. So I did it that way. I built it like that. And then I did a presentation in front of my husband. He was a great audience. So it was Rigby, my dog. And then I did it in front of like friends. And I mean, it took about 6 months of building it up to that level of, it doesn't have anything over me anymore, if that makes sense. I've almost taken the sting out of it because I've worked with it very slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. So building up slowly and starting with a, you know, someone that you trust, and then sort of building up gradually and knowing that you can handle the feelings, that the nerves might be there, but you can still get through it. Yeah.
I don't know if you agree, but it's like everyone, you know, happiness is something that's accepted. People like you to be happy. Nobody tells you what to do when you feel so uncomfortable. You want to be sick, or you're terrified, or you're sad. So I think it's important to go there sometimes just to take that terror out of it. The kind of, oh, I'm not going to run around the room screaming, or I'm not going to, I don't know, punch someone in the face. It just feels awful. But then, oh, that's it. This is worse as it's going to get. And then we'll breathe through it, kind of thing.
Absolutely. And And it's, you know, I've definitely done this in the past. It's so easy to want to just avoid the things that make you anxious and think, right, I'll, you know, because I for ages have thought public speaking is not for me. I'm just not that sort of person. I'm just going to keep myself quiet. I'm going to sit at the back of the room in the meeting and just not say anything. And, you know, I'm not that sort of person. And for ages just was telling myself this. And then when I did start to sort of push myself out of my comfort zone and be uncomfortable, your confidence grows as you do it. But you know, it's a natural thing to want to avoid feeling that horrible discomfort. So absolutely, of course we're going to try and sort of do that if it is really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that I think a lot of people will relate to, and it was something that I think you were posting on about on Instagram about, I think it was last week, and it was about insomnia and kind of how anxiety and panic had kind of contributed to that. Can you talk about that a little bit and share about that?
I mean, my relationship with sleep has always been quite volatile. Anxiety goes straight for the kind of the nighttime routine. That's the first thing to go. That's when I know something's not quite right. But over the last month, I've been experiencing insomnia, and it's been really, really challenging. I've had panic attacks during the day and I can deal with them, but when it happens at nighttime, when everyone's asleep and you don't know what's happened, and it's a lot harder. I also developed like a random twitch as well, which again is all kind of part of the anxiety. But in that moment, you kind of think, this is different. This is something new. This time I'm dying.
Yeah.
But if it isn't. And I had to take a good week out. I had to go see the doctor and talk about different options. It definitely doesn't help that, you know, you read all this stuff about sleep hygiene and they tell you how important sleep is and that if you don't get enough sleep, you won't be able to function. And it's a bit like, great. I know that that's not helping me at 1 a.m. when I can't sleep and I don't know what to do. And all I can think of is, oh, I need to get this much sleep. And it's kind of a vicious circle.
I think there can be loads of pressure around sleep. Especially if you're not sleeping well, that pressure to, you know, you're checking the clock at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're thinking, oh God, there's only 4 hours and I've got to be at work. Yeah. I've got to do this. And also there's pressure around this, the nighttime routine, I think, for lots of people. You know, I've got to be in my pyjamas at 9, I've got to be drinking my hot milk at 9:30, and if my phone's not off by this time, then I'm not going to be able to sleep. And it can almost be an extra source of anxiety if you're not able to always be in that routine. Mm-hmm. So it's a tricky one because, yeah, for lots of people, a good routine, you know, before bed really helps. For others, it can almost be an extra kind of source of issues. But that thing of kind of feeling like you're going to die, I think that's maybe the thing that people that have never experienced anxiety don't understand. They don't realise that you actually, it gets to that point where you're so terrified that you think this is it. I was prompted by what you kind of shared the other day about your insomnia. I was remembering in the past, and I got reminded by it because at the moment I've got a bit of a cough and a cold and I feel like I can't breathe properly. And it reminded me about how so much in the past, if I'd, you know, had a cough or a cold or something, really struggling in the night, thinking that I couldn't breathe, that I was going to die in the night, that, you know, horrible, horrible feelings. And I haven't got to that point now, but it just kind of brought it back to me that, how those triggers can happen and how much worse things seem at 3 in the morning or something. Do you have any suggestions for people that are struggling with insomnia? What have you kind of, anything that you've learned through your experience recently that you want to share?
Something really obvious, like the whole don't look at your phone, which everybody's, and I'm one of these people who are like, no, it doesn't affect me. I quite like, you know, having a scroll through, I don't know, whatever I'm reading or watching something, it's relaxing. No, it isn't. Mm. It absolutely isn't, because that's such a bad habit. Anything that's going to kind of stimulate that part of the brain is bad. It's the same as if you do get up, don't put the TV on. because you're effectively rewarding your brain for being awake, and you're going to stimulate it again.
Interesting.
I tend to get up at the moment and talk to myself. I talk to myself a lot. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but I'll stand in front of the mirror and say, in the same way I would talk to a panic attack, like, okay, we're awake. I'm listening to you. Like, there's obviously a problem. I can't believe I do this. It actually is in the mirror. Like, we're awake now. I'm here. I'm not fighting anymore. We're awake. I can't fall asleep. No problem. Nothing bad is going to happen. Like, I know that you feel like it is, but nothing bad is going to happen. You cannot, you're not going to die tomorrow. You can survive off a certain amount of sleep. It's okay. Then after I've done that, I'll kind of make myself a cup of tea, do some breathing techniques, and then I tend to do something really boring, like clean the floor. Like, right, off we go then. Let's do something like that and just let my mind naturally go blank without forcing it to do anything. Like, don't try and relax. So just try and just do it and see what happens.
I like that idea of doing something really boring. So, you know, it's just not very tempting. If you start watching something, the series that you've been watching on TV, you're going to be much more likely to stay awake. Clean the floor, it's going to put you to sleep.
Do you know, if you heard that from, like, when I hear that, though, externally now, it makes me laugh. Like, talk to yourself in the mirror and clean the floor. That's completely normal.
But I love the idea of talking to yourself, actually, because it does help you to step outside of yourself, actually, when you do that. And kind of almost as if you're able to step into another perspective, a kind of calmer perspective, and do that. So definitely think people should be trying this. If they aren't already talking to themselves, they should start to make it a habit. Absolutely.
I don't know why, but it works a lot better in the mirror. I mean, because I try, you know, we all talk to ourselves internally, but if you actually say the words out loud and look at yourself in the eye, it just seems to connect better.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, just don't let your housemates catch you talking to yourself in the mirror. Or maybe they'll want to get in on it as well, because it's a good technique and tool. Amazing. So thank you so much for talking to me.
Sure.
You're a big inspiration to me, and it's really nice to sit down and have a chat. Can you tell us about what you're working on at the moment? Any exciting projects that you've got going on?
Well, there's book two, which I can't talk about too much yet, but watch this space for later in the year.
Nice.
And it's Mental Health Awareness Week starting on the 14th of May. And I'm an ambassador for the charity MQ, and I'm going to be running an awareness campaign called Brain, Body, Same Respect, which I'm very much looking forward to getting my teeth stuck in. So we'll see.
Brilliant. And I'll post a link to that campaign in the show notes for this podcast. And where can people find out more about you? Can you tell us what your blog is and what social media you're on as well?
Absolutely. So you can find me, the blog is We're All Mad Here. If you type that into Google, it should be one of the first that come up. And on Twitter, I'm at Claire with a capital C, so Clary Love. Don't ask about that. That was a nickname that I never thought I'd have to use professionally, and I can't change it now. And Instagram, I'm allmadhere_UK_.
Perfect. Yeah, and I'll put links in the show notes to those as well, so people can find you really easily.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me, and I hope to see you soon, Claire.
Yes, you too.
Thanks very much.